WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
For people that don't have 401ks invested in the stock market, but they've seen their grocery prices go up, inflation.
No, you're wrong. They went up under Biden. Right now, they're going down.
At Jewel, my entire basket since last December is up $20.
Get a pound of the steak for $2.99. Now it's up to $6.99.
We're going over budget. We are spending what we have to in order to make sure that we can meet the demand.
Hey, Chicago, it's Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a breakdown of the latest local news of the day. But first, let's jump into the conversation you just clicked on, all about groceries. If your grocery bill still has you doing a double take, I'm sorry, you're not alone. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but prices keep climbing. For families that are relying on SNAP benefits, things are just getting even tougher. Nearly 2 million Illinois residents count on that assistance, but as the government shutdown continues, those benefits are shrinking. And may I remind you, the holidays are fast approaching. So the timing right now, it couldn't be worse. Now, how are people making it work? Who's helping to fill the gaps? In the conversation, you're going to hear from a watchdog reporter keeping an eye on state programs, a food pantry stepping up for neighbors in need, and one shopper finding creative ways to stretch every dollar. At the table was Stephanie Zimmerman, consumer investigations reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, and Gail Hethcote, who's a Chicagoan from Wicker Park, joined us remotely. So Stephanie, there's a lot of back and forth. You know, I mentioned SNAP benefits there, but it's so hard to figure out what exactly is happening right now. Really, it's just since November 1st, it's just been a huge bag of confusion, if you will, between the White House and federal courts and the Supreme Court. So much to unpack, and we're not going to do that in this conversation, but talk to me about how this back and forth is feeding into the tension that people are feeling right now around affordability with groceries.
Yeah, I think everybody is already stressed out about high grocery prices. They started going up in 2022, and as you know, they never really went down,
right.
And now they're kind of edging higher. And then layer on that with the holidays, lots of food-related activities. People have to cook big meals, bake. There's a lot of extra expenses. So even people who are not on SNAP benefits are getting stressed out about groceries.
So where are grocery prices now? Because it still feels expensive, but is it more expensive right now?
Yeah, I would say most are either at the high point that they were starting, you know, in 2022 when we had 9% inflation. They're either all staying there or they're edging even higher.
Yeah. And you've been tracking these grocery prices, as we know, for nearly a year. You've looked at 35 common items at four major retailers here in Chicago. So Jewel, Mariano's, Target, and Walmart. So give me your latest findings.
Yeah, and you know, it's important to note that I started doing this right after the election because so much was said about the price of groceries. If I win, prices will come down. So I wanted to see if that's true. At Jewel, my entire basket, which is, you know, based on shelf prices, my entire basket since last December is up $20. At Mariano's, it's up 18, and at Target, it's up 11. And the big ones are still beef, coffee, and diapers. Diapers now.
Beef. What is going on?
The beef has been, I mean, anybody that's shopped for beef lately knows there's a combination of just market forces and drought and high feed costs and stuff like that. But beef has been kind of a stubborn thing. But yeah, you know, that's kind of what I'm seeing.
Anything going down?
There is one bright spot, actually. It's hard to compare because Walmart doesn't always have the exact items that I need to check every month. But based on the ones that I can check, it's down about $4.50. That was largely led by three unusually low prices in November at Walmart for the butter, cheese, and bacon. So
if it
weren't for those three, I think Walmart would be right there with the others.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, Gail, let's bring you in here because we can say all we want, but tell me what you have been seeing at the grocery store.
Oh, Lance, we've switched our diet just because of cost. The beef prices, yep, they're up. Mm-hmm. You used to be able to get a pound of the Archero steak for $2.99. Now it's up to $6.99. That's $4
wow.
in 2 years.
Wow,
It's just crazy. The egg prices, of course, we've all talked about. They kept going up, and the president kept saying, oh, we're going to handle this. I don't see any handling.
Yeah. You mentioned adjusting your diet. Tell me more about the changes that you're making as a family.
Strictly turkey, chicken. I found a lot of recipes that way.
Yes.
We switched to brown rice. That might be a little more expensive, but it stretches.
Mm.
I can stretch it because I do soups, I do stews. Your slow cooker is your favorite appliance you've got, because I can put a lot of stuff in that slow cooker and get a lot for my bang out of it.
Right, right. And how many people are you shopping for in the household?
Four adults, 1 6-year-old. Now we have a newborn.
Oh.
And you said the price of diapers? Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
They're up.
Well, congrats on the newborn, but I know that certainly didn't help when it comes to cost. So you're changing your diet. Are you changing maybe what stores you go to or any other shopping habits?
I go to Indiana yeah. to shop because the taxes are cheaper. And when I get there, the gas is cheaper. So I fill the car up.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a big difference. I save between $80 to $100 a month going to Indiana.
And
going
Gail,
to Walmart only.
To Walmart in Indiana. So you're leaving Wicker Park and you're going to Indiana to shop. And so I teased this earlier, but you do know, of course, that the holidays are coming up, Gail, and that usually means a big dinner or big dinners, lots of expenses. How are you thinking about that? How are you planning for Thanksgiving and then, you know, later Christmas or Hanukkah?
I'm still trying to figure it out. If it wasn't for Common Pantry, they're going to be giving the turkeys. I'm going to go get that. So that'll be the biggest cost, will be the turkey. Vegetables will be changed up. Your rice, definitely got to have the rice. My baking that I do every year, that's like literally cut to a third because the prices of all my baking materials has gone up 50%.
Wow. Gail, I wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I hope the holidays work out well for you. You're certainly giving me some tips about some things that I can adjust in my diet as well. We're pulling another voice into the conversation, Margaret O'Connor, who's the executive director of Common Pantry. It's a nonprofit food pantry in North Center that you just heard Gail mention. Hi, Margaret. Welcome
Hi.
To the show.
Good morning, Sasha. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so you've been listening along, of course, and Gail talked there about just having to stretch. She talked about just brown rice. Yeah, it cost me a little bit more, but I can make several meals with this. So that is what she's sort of doing personally in her home to help fill the gap. Is the food pantry having to do some of the same?
A lot of it.
Yeah, tell me more.
So the demand is at a record pace. The first week of November, we had braced and prepared for the uptick in folks coming to our pantry because of SNAP benefits not being filled. And we were not in any way surprised at that. And the pantry is, tapping into our funding.
Yeah.
People are being generous, and we need that right now because we'll be spending more money on food than we anticipated. So we're going over budget. We are spending what we have to in order to make sure that we can meet the demand.
Mm-hmm. When you saw that SNAP benefits would be cut, what immediately went through your mind?
As a collective, the leadership team at Common Pantry started planning. We thought that this is going to be catastrophic. We have 30% of our folks on average who are who receive SNAP benefits. That means they are not receiving the SNAP benefits, but those who aren't and coming to us because SNAP, you know, bridged that gap are going to need us. So it was an immediate, when I say panic, I mean that in a way that like we need action and we need an action plan, and scenario planning is always part of our business.
Oh, you can use the word panic. We're talking about food.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're talking about food here.
It was very, very concerning.
Yeah. Stephanie, I mean, what comes to mind for you here? You know, you listened to my conversation there with Gail too, talking about stretching, talking about switching to turkey. Are you hearing that a lot from consumers?
Oh, definitely. I think that it's on everybody's mind. I mean, like you said, food, it's basic. And I think
we all need it.
And even people who are not on SNAP benefits, it's just hard. I mean, you go to the grocery store. I know personally, I used to walk out with several bags for the same amount of money. Now I get one bag. So it does make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. And so, Margaret, tell me more about, because you said, you know, we immediately went into planning mode. What does that actually look like? How does what's happening with SNAP, even the return of partial payments, how does that factor into the conversations that you're having with your colleagues?
Well, first of all, it is an ever-changing scenario, as you mentioned at the beginning of this particular spot. And so we ignore that and just plan on what we anticipate we're going to have to rise to the occasion to serve. And now 25% of our demand really goes up during the holidays anyway,
yes.
as Steffi mentioned. Kids are home from school, right? So you have that on top of just, you know, trying to enjoy the holidays on a budget. And so our thought was immediately to the things that we know cost people the most, the lean proteins, the eggs, the produce, the milk, and forget things that seem decadent like coffee or cooking oil. I mean, those are the things that, you know, really people want, but they're not going to be able to afford. So,
yeah. And as a food pantry, I mean, this is the time of year that this is just a thing. Every time of or every year, this time of year, right, where you're seeing an increase in need, folks are grasping at the nearest food pantry even tighter than ever before.
That's right.
How does that feel for you, Margaret, to see that on top of just your regular, you know, trying to juggle, you've got this government shutdown sort of enhancing the problem?
Enhancing is an understatement, and so for us, it's sleepless nights. I feel really. The one thing that our food programs manager came up and said to me right before the shutdown, or excuse me, right before SNAP wasn't filled, was a gentleman who attends our hot lunch. He said, you know, I can eat. I can go into a dumpster and find food. It's the families that, you know, you guys are about to see that are going to cause you the, you know, the most stress. So here's a gentleman saying, I can go eat out of a garbage can, but it's the families that you should be concerned about. So that's an example, I know, of the empathy that we are seeing from the folks that come to our pantry and the concern that they have for our team and the work that we do on the daily to try to get people fed, especially families and seniors.
You know, so you've got the ears of a lot of people right now.
Yeah.
Tell us, what do food pantries need right now?
Yeah. They need your audience to understand that that for places like Common Pantry, we can make the dollar go farther with our purchases. So your donation will be used to ensure that people can be fed.
A monetary donation.
Yeah, $1 equals 3 meals to us. So we can make that dollar stretch. So I'd say what you can do is donate. There's, of course, for Common Pantry, the Jewel food stores on Western in Roscoe Village and on Lincoln in North Center are having their holiday meals campaign. But outside of our neighborhood, you just need to do what you can do for your local pantry.
Yeah. And of course, Stephanie, rising grocery prices, definitely, as you said in your headline of your story, dampening holiday cheer, right? Like, this is just not the time for prices to continue to go up.
No, it's a double whammy, really. I mean, in the story I write about Gail, and you can read more about it, about everything that she's doing, and it's just, you know, one more thing.
Right. So give us some tips, you know, any tips for saving at the checkout?
Yeah, you know what? Our Sun-Times readers really came through with the tips. And one of the things is just to shop sales religiously. Get to know what prices normally cost so you can spot a really good deal. And then from those sales, make your plan. So whatever's the cheapest that week, that's what you're going to do for your weekly meal plan. Look for private label. Like if you can go off the main brands, you can save about 25% just on everything. Mm-hmm. You should join all of those loyalty things and get the apps for the coupons. It's kind of a pain,
yes,
but you can save a lot of money that way. And then the big thing, two things that Gail said that really resonate is, first of all, try to think about decreasing meat in your diet, adding legumes, doing your diet differently, and also batch cooking and freezing. Mm. You can save a lot of money by avoiding those convenience foods and just doing it like in the old days, cook big batches of stuff, freeze it for lunches and dinners later.
Yeah, thanks for those. That's really, really helpful. And last word to you, Margaret. Any thoughts for those who are relying on Common Pantry, for instance? What should they be keeping in mind right now as things are so confusing and just a little scary?
Yeah, I mean, when we look at opportunities to make sure that we're feeding as many people as we possibly can, we have an online ordering market, so we've seen that double. So, for example, before this situation, you know, 10, maybe 12 families would do our online pickup. You order online, then you come pick it up. Mm-hmm. We had 30 last week. So, you know, take advantage of the efficiencies and the tech in your local community.
Yes.
If you can, and just be patient and know that all of the pantries are working overtime to make sure that the gap is filled. CommonPantry.org is where your listeners can go to find out more about what we do, but just look up in your local neighborhood and figure out what you can do to right, lean in at this critical time.
Margaret O'Connor is Executive Director with Common Pantry. That's a nonprofit food pantry in North Center. And Stephanie Zimmerman is a consumer investigations reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Sasha.
Thank you.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Let's get right to what Chicago is talking about. At the table to break down the biggest stories of the day, WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane, WBEZ reporter and Weekend Edition anchor Michael Puente, and Chicago Sun-Times reporter Violet Miller. Of course, we had to start with the weather because take a look out your window. Snow? Here's Claire.
Well, it was a little bit of a mixed bag this morning because most of the snow was lake effect. So that determined where most of it fell, but started as overnight flurries turned into multiple inches of snow accumulation across the area. Around 2 this morning, that heavier snow hit portions of Lake County, Will County. Mm-hmm. Also, Mike Puente knows Northwest Indiana got hammered pretty good.
Sure did.
And then we have a little bit of a lull. We're seeing partly sunny skies right now, but meteorologists are predicting another 1 to 3 inches overall later this morning near Lake Michigan, also along that I-57 corridor. So between now and noon is when we can expect to see a couple more inches. But then by midweek, we'll be back in the 60s.
Oh, midweek seems so far away, Claire. And Mike, I'm looking at you and I'm kind of chuckling because guess who had to drive to Windsor, Ontario yesterday, there and back?
Oh my God.
It was me, yeah. And so I passed through your neck of the woods and that was the worst part of my drive.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Claire says, well, it was only lake effects. No, like that's supposed to make us feel better.
Right.
It took me 2 hours to get into work today. That you know, Northwest Indiana did not disappoint. That lake effect van just dumped at least two feet of snow.
Oh, yeah.
It was tough getting out of my driveway, and I didn't park my car in my garage for whatever reason. So if this was preseason for the winter, I'm already in the losing end.
Yeah, absolutely. So how are the roads looking this morning? I know on my way in, it was kind of rough. I took Lakeshore to get to work, and there was a bit of a slowdown. There were a couple of crashes.
Yeah.
Single car spin outs.
But you know, the city is pretty well maintained. IDOT does a pretty good job. The salt trucks were out. Kennedy coming in this morning, a slow go, but at least people were getting in. But yes, numerous crashes across the board.
Yeah. How about your neck of the woods, Violet?
Well, my car did not start. So I was a CTA rider today.
Ouch.
But it was very smooth. So props to the CTA, guys.
Shout out to the CTA. Some positive news for our transit. Now, winter storm warnings and watches. I know, are those still in effect? I know there was a warning yesterday.
Winter weather advisory remains in effect until noon. So mostly that's just going to be blustery conditions. The wind could reach up to 30 miles per hour before noon, and that's when the rest of the snow is going to linger. But from noon onward, we should be thawing out.
Our executive producer, Dan Tucker, says it's snowing in Humboldt Park pretty good right now. Yeah. Here we go. What about those flights? Any more delays and cancellations because of the weather?
Yeah. So Chicago's two airports among the worst in the nation for flight cancellations just today. So 10% of flights leaving O'Hare International and about 25% of flights leaving Midway have already been canceled. Latest from FlightAware is 281 cancellations and 255 delays at O'Hare. And it's not even 10 a.m. yet.
That's a lot.
So the delays follow the snow this morning, but also, as we know, airports across the country experiencing these significant disruptions due to the ongoing government shutdown.
Right.
So the FAA has reduced flights significantly because of air traffic controllers have gone without pay and they're not showing up for work. And so that's impacting flight travel at least through this week with the winter weather.
Yeah. Well, Violet, you were busy reporting yesterday before the massive pileup of snow. I guess it was probably just a dusting when you were out there. And there was quite a bit of immigration enforcement happening this weekend. We know areas like Little Village and Cicero also saw some activity. So start with an overview and just give us big picture. What was happening?
Yeah, I mean, we saw a lot of what we've been seeing every single weekend now. It feels almost routine, and it's kind of nauseating to think that it will ever become routine. But Little Village, we saw a lot of immigration enforcement. We saw, you know, once again, residents facing off with agents to, you know, kind of in response to agents taking, you know, people from their communities. We also saw in Cicero, ICE, or rather federal agents, most with CBP, making an escape, pepper spraying a line of vehicles that just were trying to leave a Sam's Club there. And so, they were not following, they were not protesting per what some of those folks said at a press conference yesterday. And one of the folks hit by the pepper spray was a one-year-old child in the back seat of one of these moving vehicles, which would appear to both fly in the face of District Court Judge Sarah Ellis's temporary injunction, as well as CBP use of force policy, which prohibits that.
Yeah, so the family is speaking out, right? Because the parents and their one-year-old were pepper sprayed.
Yes, yeah. Everybody in the vehicle was pepper sprayed, mostly the father, who said his face went numb afterwards, and they are considering legal action for the specialist
care. And they were just trying to leave a grocery store parking lot.
Yeah, they reiterated many times they were not part of any protest, they were not following federal agents, they were out grocery shopping.
My goodness. Mike, shots were allegedly fired at federal agents in Little Village Saturday. We don't have many details, though. What do we have so far?
Yeah, that's right, Sasha. And we always have to preface it with allegedly, because we've seen in the past that DHS has not always been, let's face it, honest with the facts. So what we know is that at least two people were arrested by Chicago police and shots allegedly fired at U.S. Border Patrol agents conducting immigration enforcement near 26 and Kedzie. When DHS claims a man in a black Jeep fired shots at them and fled the scene. Now, the Chicago Police Department confirmed they received a call about shots being fired at federal agents, but CPD stopped short of confirming the details by DHS, including whether someone intentionally shot at agents. And the Chicago Sun-Times reports no injuries, no damage from gunfire or ballistic evidence was found, and no weapon has been recovered either. So we'll have to continue to monitor this.
And not to mention, CPD will not have information on that. That was confirmed to us yesterday. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a federal investigation into the shooting at federal agents.
So we actually know who's investigating at this time, because I know that that's also been some confusion throughout this Operation Midway Blitz. I'm going to stick with you, Mike, here, and stick with immigration enforcement for just another moment. Business leaders, they're also speaking out. What is on their minds?
That's right, Sasha. You know, as we know, immigration enforcement is impacting businesses everywhere, in the neighborhoods, the suburbs, and even downtown. So late last week, more than 30 business and civic leaders gathered to denounce the aggressive deportation campaign here in Chicago. And Jack Levin, for example, CEO of the Chicagoland Chambers of Commerce, told the Sun-Times that ICE raids have, quote, scared people away from restaurants, cultural events, retail corridors, and even the downtown area, which is the heart of Chicago's economic engine. And also at this press conference, you had Arne Duncan, the former U.S. Secretary of Education, and he's now the managing director of the violence prevention organization Chicago CRED. He says ICE actions are, quote, not about law enforcement, that it's about shock and scare. So it's impacting businesses everywhere.
Now, Governor Pritzker is also raising the alarm. This is after an employee for the Illinois Department of Transportation was questioned while he was on the job on Friday. What happened there?
Yeah, this is a really odd one. So he's a U.S. citizen. He's Indian descent. He was stopped and questioned by ICE agents on Friday morning. So again, he works for the Department of Transportation, and he was working in Park Ridge on a construction project. So apparently he was asked by these enforcement agents about incoming New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani before being released. And so it looks like he was targeted for whatever reason. And of course, Governor J.B. Pritzker says he's appalled by the incident and that state employees should not be, you know, they should be able to work without being targeted. So, and DHS,
and asking
of course,
him about Mamdani,
what does that have
point?
To do anything over here?
What does that have to do
here?
With anything?
He's so, you know, they were probably, you know, profiling him for some type of reason. And DHS isn't really talking about this at all. So, which isn't surprising.
Yeah. In other news, Violet, Jeff Tobolsky, who's the ex-Cook County commissioner who was due to report to prison early next year, has died. This was at the age of 61. Remind us who he is and what he was convicted of.
Yeah, so Tobolsky was the former Cook County commissioner and mayor of Southwest Suburban McCook. He had been he'd pled guilty in extortion and bribery schemes, admitting to taking more than $250,000 in bribes. Had been sentenced to multiple years in prison. You know, as you said, was supposed to be reporting to jail in January, but his health kind of took a turn in October, and so that was extended out to January. And obviously, you know, resulted in his passing yesterday.
Yeah, sounds like that his health just kept failing, right? Especially over the last several months. Now, a note, folks, that the back and forth in the courts over SNAP benefits, it does continue. Now, on Saturday, the Trump administration directed states to, quote, immediately undo steps that they've taken to fully fund SNAP. This order came after the Supreme Court Friday granted a request from the government to pause the payments, and just days after a federal judge had ordered them to be paid in full. Now, this is causing, of course, a ton of confusion. So stay tuned. In a few minutes on In the Loop, we're going to discuss the latest on SNAP. We'll do our best to try to unravel that confusion, as well as the fact that grocery prices continue to rise. So stay tuned for that. What else is on your radar, Claire?
Well, the U.S. Senate took the first step, this was yesterday, to put an end to the government shutdown. Voting extended through the weekend, and a group of moderate Democrats agreed to proceed without a guarantee that the Affordable Health Care Act subsidies would be extended. That's been the big crux of this, the big holdup. But that group of moderate Democrats did include Illinois Senator Dick Durbin. Durbin says that the bill that they came up with isn't perfect, but it takes important steps to reduce the shutdown's hurt. Durbin focusing a lot on the workforce and people saying that the bill that they came up with would fund SNAP for the year ahead. So that's important to note. It would also reverse the mass firings the Trump administration ordered throughout the shutdown. A lot of people, remember, were furloughed.
That's right.
Fired sort of out of the blue. Durbin says, though, that Republicans have vowed, so this is just sort of a handshake kind of deal, right, to schedule a vote on the Obamacare tax credits in December. So if this were to go through, that he wants them to follow up, that this group of moderate Democrats would want to keep healthcare affordable. But that move, this coming to terms, angered many in their caucus yesterday who say Americans just really want them to continue to fight at this point. So more to come. You know, this is still going to have to pass in the House. A long way to go.
Wow. All right. Well, Mike, we almost got through this news update without talking about the Bears. Can you believe that?
That would be disastrous.
Right. I mean, quite a comeback victory yesterday.
Yeah, you know, you cannot sleep on this team. If they're behind, they might pull another rabbit out of their hat, just like they did yesterday. They were down like 10 points in the fourth quarter, and Caleb Williams just continues to shine. He's becoming this football
superstar
version of Michael Jordan. Just really just amazing, amazing efforts. And this has come on top of the Bulls are doing
well. And
people
doubted him.
They doubt, including me.
Including
I would have benched him last week. You know,
hoping you would admit that.
I admitted that. You know, so he's playing great.
Yeah.
Did you even see on camera? He goes, up yours, Michael Puente. But this comes at a great time in Chicago because you got the Bulls who have been winning. They've lost their last two games, but they're doing well. And the Blackhawks are amazing. Connor Bedard he's another star. We really need to shine in Chicago. It's a good time right now.
Good time for Chicago sports. Absolutely. And so as we look to wrap here, Violet, I mean, I want to put this in context. We are now 2 months into the federal government's Operation Midway Blitz in the Chicago area. I mean, this started at the beginning of September, September 9th. So exactly 2 months. You have been covering this on the ground day in and day out. So I'm curious, when you take a stock and you look back at everything that's happened so far, are there a couple of folks that you've encountered in your reporting that have just stuck with you?
It's really hard to narrow it down to just one or two people because there's been so many. I mean, just sitting outside Broadview, the number of families that you meet that are coming to bring, you know, needed medication to loved ones and just, you know, watch them go through, you know, this kind of horrible process where, you know, they're grieving and actively going through this. So it's really hard to narrow that down. But I do think that those are the people that stand out to me more than anything. And I would encourage anybody who maybe wants to kind of understand that a little bit themselves to go read one of our audience engagement specialists. Vanessa Lopez has a piece in the Sun-Times today.
That's right.
Really, really powerful and really brings you there and makes you understand what this process is like for somebody in the middle of it.
Yeah. We've got breaking news from NPR here. The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday declined to take up a case challenging its landmark decision to legalize gay marriage nationwide. So, of course, we'll keep an eye on
that. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we could get a ruling. Speaking of rulings, as early as next week, Mike, this is on whether President Trump can deploy the National Guard here in Chicago. For now, it's still on hold, right? Nothing's changed. Okay.
Nothing's changed.
So as we head into month three, then, of Operation Midway Blitz, what's top of mind for you?
Well, if it does happen, I look at the National Guard a little bit different than, say, DHS or Border Patrol in that these are individuals who signed up for the National Guard to help their state, help their country, and they're being thrust into this political fight. So how are residents here in Chicago or the city going to accept them if it's decided that they can be deployed in Chicago? Maybe the city leaders would find a way to work with the National Guard. They're here, utilize them. I don't know if city leaders might think that's capitulating to the president and not going to cooperate, but if they're going to be here and there's nothing you can do about it, maybe work with them. I was in D.C. a couple of weeks ago. They were there. They were just out walking around, you know, not really causing any issues. So we have to see. And now winter is here. How are they going to adjust to that and all this enforcement with DHS during wintertime, which is already kind of miserable for Chicagoans?
I just feel like we don't need any more presence of folks in just army gear.
For sure, yeah. But I think it's important to note, I mean, like the threat that a lot of people are thinking about is already here. You know, we've seen what CBP is doing on our streets every single week, every single day almost at this point. And so You know, while yes, this kind of like looming National Guard deployment is scary in the sense that we'll see more fatigues in the streets of Chicago. You know, it seems like Chicagoans are already facing the brunt of what they may fear.
Well, Sasha, you got to understand, again, I kind of go back to a lot of people are saying this isn't about safety and keeping a neighborhood safe and fighting crime. It's about a scare tactic and keeping people unease about all this. There's a message behind there. Mm-hmm. We have to remember that. That's what it appears. It just appears to be something against Chicago.
WBEZ's Michael Puente and Claire Lane and Violet Miller of the Sun-Times.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Maha Ahmed, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/intheloop. Thanks for listening.
Rise and shy. WBEZ is serving local stories for breakfast every weekday morning from 5 to 11. Tune in on the WBEZ app to hear what Chicago's talking about as you start your day.